I have 3 new papers coming out soon, which makes my job today rather difficult. In particular, Paul Aspinwall sent me a file with our paper, which is to come out soon, and the title was completely different. So in the middle of the night, I was reading his explanation. So the title of my talk, which was a simple example of moduli fixing, become an infinite set of supersymmetric vacua with fixed moduli, and I'll try to explain it. Also, what added as part of all these unpublished papers is the relation between flux vacua and supersymmetric attractors. On the other hand, I was planning to talk, and if I will talk about earthing, I will not reach anything useful, so I plan to cover and explain one of the papers in this same set of thinking, where I can explain things. And so I'll give some information on these new things coming out soon, but mostly I'll try to be very clear about what I already understand quite well. And I'll give you a motivation for my studies. So the line of thinking is I want to talk about flux amplification, stabilization of moduli, KKLT models of metastable de Sitter space. This brings me to fine-tuning issues in string cosmology, in particular to D3, D7 models, and I'll tell you where, for me, there is a problem here. And so I had to check the situation about stabilization of moduli and instanton corrections in KKLT, in particular with regard to this model, but also in general, and how fluxes may affect the standard condition. And I think I have a very strong belief now that the conditions which were understood before are too restricted. We can easily relax them, which is what I will mostly explain today about the index of Dirac operator on the brain and how what it has to do with instanton corrections. And I feel quite proud because when we asked Isaac Ringer visiting Stanford what he thinks about the situation with this index of a Dirac operator on brain in presence of fluxes, he told he doesn't know. And so you can't do it by opening mathematical books. We had to work it out. This led to this simple, which I removed the word simple because actually there is an infinite number of them, so you can't call them simple, of moduli fixing, which is M-theory on K3 times K3, and type to be dual of it, which is K3 on T2 over Z2 with fluxes. And the set of papers, some of them are published and some to come out soon, include Aspinwall, Berkshoff, Kachur, Kashanipur, Sorokin, and Tomasiello. So this is more or less the formulation of our results concerning this Dirac operator on M5 brain with background fluxes. So we studied Dirac equation on M5 brain wrapped on some 6-cycle in Calabi-Yau 4-fold in presence of background flux. We reduced the computation of normal bundle U1 anomaly to counting the solution of a finite dimensional linear system in cohomology. We have some excellent postdocs at Stanford, so I learned a lot from them about it. Some of you who know me know this is not something which I know offhand. This system depends on choice of flux. In example of K3 times K3, we find that the presence of flux changes the anomaly and allows instanton corrections to the superpotential, which would otherwise be absent. Now, I don't quite believe all the duality arguments when you have fluxes. So from this argument, if you trust duality, the case of type 2B on K3 times T2 over Z2 should follow, which is the case which I need for my favorite cosmological model. So I decided to do things directly in type 2B, and this is one of the papers to come out soon with these people, and things do work confirming this duality, which you may believe or not. So this is this yesterday changed title of the paper with Aspinwall. We analyze M-theory compactified on K3 times K3 with fluxes and its F-theory dual, which is dual to an oriented fold of type 2B string on K3 times T2 over Z2. And this is our conclusion as of today, but the paper is not published yet. we see that there is an infinite number of choices of the G-flux in this case, leading to an infinite set of inequivalent supersymmetric vacua. We argue that instanton effects will generically fix all of the moduli in this infinite class. There is no modular space anymore in these theories. So as a surprise, as part of my discussion with Aspinwall and trying to understand his language, I came up with a conjecture about flux vacuum and supersymmetric attractors. And this is, again, in the process, so I don't know all of it. But the conjecture is that this universal formulation of supersymmetric attractor equations, it is valid for flux vacuum or BPS black holes, depending on the choice of components of flux, either in compact space or in 4D space. And the example I understand well, I'll show you this example. So, because everything in my work with Aspinwall concerning the modular fixing has to do with something which is well known in mathematical literature as attractive K3 surface. So what I know now that we can define flux vacua with rigid explicitly attractive K3 surface where a class of moduli are fixed by fluxes. The explicit values of complex structures are extracted from the previously known solutions of attractor equations for the black holes with the same symmetry. So we have kind of, we can use as a bonus from attractors and bring it into cosmology. At least I know it in this example, but I think it is more general. So now let me go to the motivation of this total set of ideas that since our universe is an ultimate test of fundamental physics and high energy accelerators will probe the scale of energies way below grand unified scales, and cosmology and astrophysics are sources of data in the gravitational sector of fundamental physics. And so the impact of discovery of acceleration of the universe is the following for me. Until recently, string theory could not describe acceleration of the early universe, inflation. This one was known for 20 years. The discovery of current acceleration made the problem even more severe, but also helped to identify the root of the problem. And in short, I'll talk about this in more detail for my coming lectures next week here. In short, if you look at the dilaton and the total volume and look at their canonical potentials, you will find out that these stringy moduli have very steep potential incompatible with the data on early universe inflation as well as on current acceleration, particularly the volume. This factor of square root of 6 is way beyond things which could confront the data on current acceleration. So therefore, the conclusion was the landscape is extremely steep, everything runs, and there is no way to make a nice cosmology in this climate. However, you can go out and search for some slow roll parts of the landscape, and they are there. You just search on the web, then you search in real mathematics. Okay, so something which is well known, I just bring it because I work in this context at this moment. So I tried to build cosmology starting in particular for type 2B string theory using all the known things. And the most recent advanced models with fixing all moduli, I think it was reported here by Deneff and Florea. And so my concern is those instanton corrections, because in my favorite model, if I trust the conditions which mathematics tell me I should satisfy, I can't fix some of the moduli. So just a reminder that when you need to do volume stabilization, you can do things in first fix the moduli in ADS minimum and then uplift it to some De Sitter maximum, because we have this, we studied this in type 2B, so this is kind of at least known how to do it. And then if we do have this De Sitter, we can at least face the situation which cosmological observation tells us. This is how we see our universe as of now, over the last 7 billion years, by the way. Okay, so here is the task. Can we find in string theory friendly to early universe as well as current acceleration cosmology those nearly flat directions? we really need them. If we find out that everywhere things are bad, it's not good. So let's try. Of course, we can do fine-tuning. This is obvious. But it would be good to find those things because they are there and have some understanding as to why they could be. So I give you a short overview of new class of inflationary models which have been constructed over the last number of years. And one of them, my favorite, D3D7 brain inflation, and some of the authors are here, I'm glad to see them, which is associated with D-term inflation, has at least some potential in it to have a natural explanation of these flat directions. So let's talk about fine-tuning. In some of these models, what is happening, the way things work, we have, this is a volume, and this is the field which is an inflaton. When it shows up in Keller potential in this form, things go bad in the following sense that because in KKLT model, at least, this is a constant part of superpotential, and this is a part which comes either from instanton corrections or from Gugino condensation. And if this is your Keller potential, no matter what you do, the DC anti-DC brain inflation with volume stabilization, and we work in the work deformed conifold geometry, and then this is our situation that M squared is of the order of Hubble parameter squared, and this completely kills inflation without fine-tuning. So it is possible to improve the situation with fine-tuning. There are lots of attempts to do it. And this is fine. We can live with it in the landscape, and we have to admit, well, we do fine-tuning. We have to do fine-tuning to explain 10 to the minus 120 for cosmological constant anyway, because nobody knows what to do better. But still, let's try and do something with this shift symmetry I was trying to understand, whether you could really get it or not. So in the end of the day, it is the property of this combination of Keller and superpotential, which has to have this. So in terms of this combination of Keller and superpotential, the potential is by some reason less known, but of course people like Girardella and Tuan and many other people, this is how they see the potential. So there is one single function which is invariant under Keller transformation, and therefore in the end of the day, if this function has particular symmetry which I'd like to use for cosmology, then we should look on this combination. So we need models where the position of the D3 brain or whatever object is moving, realizing the inflaton, after stabilization of the volume, should still be a modulus. And this is a reminder of the model. Many of you have seen it, and some people in this room actually did the picture. So this is D3 brain, this is D7 brain. There are some fluxes which play the role of Philopoulos terms. And D3 is slowly approaching D7. The mass of hypers, which are strings stretched between those brains, it is split due to presence of a flux on D7. As a result, there is a potential like that, which describes hybrid D3-D7 inflation model. And all of this was before we have realized that we should worry about volume stabilization. Because if the volume will run down in the process of cosmological evolution, and my space will become 10-dimensional, whatever other moduli are doing becomes completely irrelevant. Because then, see, what observationists see now in the sky, they are telling us everything they can see is well described in the framework of effective four-dimensional general relativity. So it's not good to have runaway volume. So all of these models become completely out of control unless we can fix the volume. So, and can we, after we fix the volume, keep this shift symmetry is another fundamental question. Now, we had this proposal about Inferton Trench with students of mine. And the idea was that if we take this KKLT model seriously, which is what we plotted is this real part of the row here, and the potential has a minimum in the volume direction. But then what we would like to have somehow is to get from the theory, not from because we want it, to have this dependence on the inferton. So if the dependence in this function G, which is a combination of Keller and superpotential, enters through this combination, then what we actually have, we have this inferton trench, because the motion of brain in this direction does not destabilize the volume, and this is what we would like to have, which in this case is associated with supersymmetric ground state of brains in stabilized volume. So this is what we would like to have. However, again, why in this model we could expect, at least at the classical level, to have anything like flat direction? Because we have chosen particular isometries in compactified space. So type 2B string theory compactified on this manifold, which is a manifold with fluxes and mobile D3 brains and heavy D7 brain, has an interesting potential where the shift symmetry is broken in a way which is desirable for cosmology due to this split of mass of strings stretched between brains. And what we learned more recently working more on this model that to face the data is associated with current observation of microwave, cosmic microwave background anisotropy, and we have to get this 10 to the minus 5 from somewhere. And things in string theory are quite tight in terms of getting small numbers. Still, if you work things out, you find that the flux being quantized of the order 2 pi can still reasonably well explain this 10 to the minus 5, because you do have large volume and large power of volume. And this may help. Yeah. Coming to this paper. Yes, I'm coming. Of course, I knew everybody will ask me. Okay, so in this model, in the form in which it was designed before we worried about volume stabilization at all, this symmetry was there, period. Now, however, now that we are stabilizing the... So let me finish this transparency. So everything was fine because this is kind of in reasonable agreement with the data. This is a tilt of spectrum in cosmic microwave background. Now, where's the problem? This is not the problem which Liam pointed out. The problem which Liam pointed out was that if I do a stabilization of volume using Gugino condensation, then I have to think about the threshold effect. And then there was a paper by Kors, which he used their calculation, which may destroy this shift symmetry under certain conditions. So first of all, the model which Kors had was not our model. They had all 16 D7s on top of each other instead of being spread over four different fixed points. So already, even if I would use Gugino condensation for volume stabilization, as well as facing these threshold corrections which they have calculated, they have to be recalculated in our actual model, which looks like a pillow because it is like tetrahedron, and brains are sitting at four different fixed points. Therefore, the calculation as it was done doesn't concern our model. Has to be redone. Yeah.
Isn't there a generosity argument, or do you think you have a special case, or do you think there's no generosity argument?
Oh, okay. So if I use Gugino condensation, I have to calculate threshold corrections, which have been calculated by Kors, but in a different model.
Right.
Well, so instead of doing this, I decided to do something else, which I was doing anyway. I knew that there is another problem in this model, which I am now facing, and I'm actually, this part is solved. So what the problem was, even before shift symmetry, the problem was that in K 3 times T2 over Z2, I can use Gugino condensation for stabilization of volume of K3, because the theory is N equals 2, and the volume of K3 is part of a vector multiplet. Therefore, being a vector multiplet, scalars are gauge coupling constants. Their vacuum expectation will give me e to the minus 1 over g Young-Mills squared times f mu nu squared. And this is the mechanism of Gugino condensation, which simultaneously may produce those threshold corrections. However, this other volume of T2 over Z2 is part of the hypermultiplet. Therefore, I cannot use Gugino condensation. The major assumption of KKLT construction was we have just one total volume. But this model has two of them. And then when this became clear, it was also clear that either I can use this second version of stabilization of volume in KKLT, which is Witten's condition of brain wrapped around cycles, Euclidean brain wrapped around cycles, which is not Gugino condensation. And then there was a problem because this manifold, K3 times T2 over Z2, has an arithmetic genus equals 2, and Witten's condition was equal 1. So by trying to understand what actually is happening here, my understanding was either I will be able to do instant turn corrections to stabilize the volume, then A, it will work for both of my volumes, both K3 as well as T2 over Z2, plus the issue of threshold correction will be out from this construction, because they concern only Gugino condensation. However, the problem was very difficult to resolve, and so for those of you who have seen KKLT papers, so either we can use Gugino condensation or Euclidean instanton, and the conditions were very strict, so it would not apply to this model. And so even before I start asking about shift symmetry, I cannot stabilize the volume, the total volume. So we have pursued this program for quite a while, and this is where we are now. So I tried to formulate this problem in a very clear way. So in 96, in type 2B compactification, under certain conditions, there can be corrections to superpotential coming from Euclidean D3 brains. Witten's argument was based on M-theory counting of fermion zero modes in the Dirac operator of the M5 brain wrapped on a sixth cycle of a Calabi-Yau fourfold, and he found that such corrections are possible under condition that the divisor of the fourfold has arithmetic genus 1, and chi is a sum of various harmonic modes weighted with the chirality in the normal direction to the brain, and it should be equal to 1. I do not expect those of you who don't know this notation to follow me, but the fact is, for the case of my interest, it was 2, not 1. So in presence of such instantons, there is a correction. So I continue what Witten told us. There is a correction to the superpotential, which at large volume yields a new term, which is the area which the brain wraps. So we have this e to the minus rho, and there are lots of possibilities, but they're all not quite clear. Then in type 2B string theory, the leading exponential dependence comes from the action of an Euclidean D3 brain wrapping a fourth cycle, which is what we need for stabilizing whatever object we want, if the brain can wrap it. Until recently, Witten's constraint chi equals 1 was a guide for constructing all models in which Keller moduli are stabilized via superpotential generated by Euclidean instantons. First indication that in presence of fluxes there are more possibilities were given by these people, and they found that there is an indication that sometimes you can stabilize moduli even where the index is larger or equal to 1. So what we did, we just performed a systematic study, and there was a paper one day before us, by Saulina with related result. So what we did, we constructed the Dirac operator on M5 brain with background fluxes. And we performed the counting of fermionic zero mode and have found the generalized index. So the first part was somewhat difficult because nobody knew what is the Dirac operator in the, on M5 with background fluxes. So with Dima Sorokin, we worked it out. And it turns out it is a very natural object. It's just a covariant derivative in presence of torsion, where torsion is due to fluxes. Those are a bunch of gammas. So here is the new Dirac equation on the brain. And so I'll try to explain this mostly in my talk today. So this is a normal Dirac operator, and this is something which comes from fluxes. And you see A, B, C are directions of a divisor, and I is a normal direction. And it turns out that three components of this four form have to be on a divisor and one in the normal. So this is Witten's counting, and the question we asked about the index of Dirac operator, can flux affect it? And the lore, which existed at that time, was that there is a homotopy equivalence of the Dirac operator in absence presence of flux, and therefore index should not change. However, as I will argue, we cannot use this argument. So without fluxes, we count the difference between the number of solutions of Dirac equation with positive chirality minus the number with negative chirality. Chirality corresponds to U1 in the normal direction to the divisor. I have a fourfold. I wrap M5 on six cycle, and there are two normal directions. And those two normal, SO2, give me U1, and this is the weight in which it works. So U1 symmetry in presence of fluxes and F chirality. So we ended up by, we had to introduce new chirality here. So invariance under the structure group of the normal bundle. This is what was built in Witten's argument, why all of this matters at all. So the action is invariant and equation of motion are covariant under SO5. So imagine M5 brain and there is a 5 transverse direction to the brain. We assume 11-dimensional diffeomorphism is intact after the anomalies are somehow dealt with. And so the structure group is a reflection of symmetries of 11-dimensional supergravity. The flux ABCI, which is because this is when you look at the action of the M5, you find that it transforms as a vector. In the case of interest, the structure group SO5 is broken down to SO3 because we are looking at M3 on fourfold. So SO3 is our R cube. And SO2 is a normal direction to the brain inside the fourfold, which is the corresponding U1. But flux transforms. So in Witten's analysis, generated superpotential, the structure group of the normal bundle plays the role of an R charge for the three-dimensional effective theory. This R charge of this three-dimensional theory is related to number of zero modes of the Dirac equation on M5 brain. This charge depends on chirality of zero modes in the normal direction. And the main thing is, either you have two of them, and then you can represent it through superpotential. Superpotential does affect the potential. Or you have four fermionic zero modes, and then they just deform your metric because you have the integral over d4 theta. It doesn't affect the potential. And so if you have too many zero modes, you don't have a superpotential which will stabilize your cosmological evolution. So this is a very important issue. And so the way things were developing was where that first we had to generalize this concept of chirality, which was meant how do we use the weight of the index. And here is more on this. So in presence of flux, the solution of Dirac equation no longer have definite chirality in the normal direction because gamma 5 no longer commutes with Dirac operator because there is a sign change. So the action of this subgroup of U1 on Dirac operator in presence of flux is generated by chirality with simultaneous rotation of a flux by pi. It is F has to go into minus F. We call this symmetry F chirality. F chirality commutes with Dirac operator, and therefore we can choose a basis of solutions of Dirac equation with definite charge under F chirality such that this equation takes place. And so we refer to the number of solutions to Dirac equation in presence of flux weighted by F chirality as chi d as function of F. So first of all, we have to have something new to calculate. Now, this is for people who may be curious. Details about why, so in the end, no homotopy argument applies because of that. So I'll skip this just to show you that it was all taken care. Okay, so what we did, actually, we just solved the equations. I mean, you have equations, you solve them, you count them, period. You get the answer. And so I call it brute force solutions of Dirac equation with fluxes. So it turned out that positive chirality is not affected by fluxes, whereas negative is affected. Just it turns out. Then we made an ansatz. So there is a zero solution, there is a 0-2, there is a 0-1, and 0-3 harmonics. So the equations were made explicit in terms of form. So we used the Becker square condition that, just for simplicity, that we take four flux to be 2-2 and primitive. Those are our equations. Now, for those of you who have seen Witten's paper, you will remember those symbols. Some people in this room may not. So when I was staring at those symbols and I was asking all my colleagues for a year, can you please explain this? And it was hard. They would refer me to some theorems in mathematical books. And I had either read the books or do something else. So something else was to use this formalism I told you about and just write down the equation. Right? So now, you see, there is one place where I have flux. Everything else is without flux. So the first thing I did, let's throw out flux, let's get Witten's result. As Eric Berkshoff calls this, inhuman language. Because you have equations, you solve them, and you may not know all the definitions from algebraic topology. It still works. So here is the answer. The answer reproduces Witten's index equals 1, when there are no fluxes. However, with fluxes present, we were able to solve the equation and calculate the new index. Because with this flux, you can't use the textbooks. They don't tell you what will happen with this equation. You really have to look at the equation. And this is what happened. There's a new constraint on zero modes. This equation I'll now explain shortly. So we can interpret this equation as a linear operation, H annihilating some forms. So H, by the way, is a projector onto harmonic forms. For example, H on omega is a harmonic form, which could be zero, for any form. This projector gives zero on any exact or coexact form. Exact forms are trivial in cohomology, and coexact are trivial in D. Dagger cohomology. Therefore, going back to this equation, look at this equation. The rest doesn't know about fluxes. So if I apply my projector, this term is gone, and this term is gone. And therefore, H on fluxes should satisfy this constraint. This is a solution. This is a summary. So we start with known solution, but now, so this is still there, this is still there, this is still there. This is affected because I have to solve this constraint equation. So the new form of 0-2 form depends on this new constraint. And the constraint is essential difference between fluxless case and case with fluxes. As we have mentioned, it presents a linear system. Sorry, I didn't mention it. But the equation is just of this size and generically have no solution. And therefore, if the dimension of space of solution of this constraint equation is n, the dimension of the space of solution of the Dirac equation becomes h00, h10, n, and h30. The undetermined number n obviously satisfies this constraint. It's somewhere between 0 and h to 0. This is the number of 0 to forms. In case n equals 0 corresponds to case in which the flux is completely generic. Therefore, the equation is invertible. All you can do is kill those forms. In case there are no fluxes, n is precisely the number of this 2-0 form. And so here's the answer. As I told you, I was motivated by studies in cosmology. I wanted the answer for my favorite model, but we came up with completely general answer. So the new computation of the normal bundle U1 anomaly gives the answer for this F-type index, F-chirality index, which is the usual one. And this is the difference between H02 and N. And N in each case, when somebody gave you fluxes, you have to calculate the number of solution of this new equation, which doesn't exist when you have no fluxes. So n is dimension of solution of constraint equation. And so if we want instantons, what we actually need, we need this F chirality index to be equal to 1. And it is easy to see that the usual index doesn't have to be equal to 1 if this is your n. So Witten's condition is generalized. New vacua, which admit instanton corrections, could have the new index equals 1, the old not equal 1. And the day we published this paper, Frederick Deneff sent us that today the landscape just got another factor 10 to the 500 bigger. And the reason is he spent last year running computer programs, finding Calabi-Yau's with usual chi equals 1. But we do need fluxes to stabilize the complex structures even before we think about instanton corrections. So the way to go is really go carefully through these general conditions which we have now and see what kind of models we can use instanton corrections. Yes?
What is happening? I mean, if
I'm just assuming,
I say, you know, will we turn on the plus
adiabatic
with 0?
Precisely, which is what Seti, of course, was telling us. The Chicago School knows that. This was precisely this homotopy. So you kind of should be able to switch flux adiabatically. So this page where I explain this story, roughly speaking, tells you that this argument is based on an assumption that the new Dirac equation is acting in the same space, which is not true. It actually, the space of solution is different, and therefore you cannot do adiabatically. But it is best explained. I can go back to the previous slide. No, it's just the wrong way of asking a question. Because when you actually solve the equation and you get your solution, then you go back and ask why the lore was not working in this case. First, we will discuss it, right, because I still have lots of things to, at least, to show. So what happened, the landscape seems to be bigger. All models which these people worked out with Douglas and Deneff, they always would have chi equals 1, and Antonello Grassi is an expert, and this is what they were doing. But with fluxes, you may... What is interesting is that the previous case is absolutely valid, so you may well be right with all the models. Still, you may have new models. Because examples now include what I call friendly parts of the landscape. Okay, here is the first reading of what it means for K3 times K3. So M5 brain wraps a sixth cycle, D equals K, excuse me, how much time do I have? 20 minutes, good. So it wraps K3 times P1 of the fourfold, and because they have only even cohomology, the same is true for the total sixth cycle. As a result, in our ansatz, we are left only with positive modes. But this is equal to 1, and this is equal to 1, and this is too bad because we have 2. So we have no corrections to superpotential, only corrections to killer. Now, Now remember, we add this flux and we choose a specific one, which is 2,0 and 0,2 Forman K3. This is our 4 flux. Now, by solving this constraint equation, what we need to do is to contract flux with omega bar 1 and project in the non-harmonic piece, and I skip details. It just tells you that this is a case where this mod is killed in presence of flux. So either you have this mod, no flux, or you have this particular flux, this mod is out. And you are left with chi of the divisor equals 2, but the actual counting of zero mods is half of it. Therefore, stabilization of Keller module is possible in this case. Okay, so this brings me to the work which was parallel and actually is not using anything about Dirac operator and counting of zero mode, because this work goes only about this K3 times K3. And the reason I asked Paul to help me with this problem, because he has this wonderful review on what K3 surfaces are. I was studying these surfaces, and then I asked him, could you please go with your own reasoning, completely unbiased, don't trust me, and just check whether it is working. So the title of the paper, which is almost ready, is now an infinite set of supersymmetric vacua with fixed moduli. Here is the abstract. So we analyze M-theory compactified on K3 times K3 with fluxes and its F-theory limit, which is built on orientifold of type 2B string on K3 over T2 over Z2. We see, and I'll tell you what it means, we see that there is an infinite number of choices of the G-flux in this case, leading to an infinite set of inequivalent supersymmetric vacua. We argue that instanton effects will generically fix all of the moduli in this infinite class. So Paul and I feel very strong about it, and also it is nice because after so many years, not everybody knows there is a moduli problem all over cosmology, all over string theory. And this is one of the really, the reason why our first title was a simple example, because this is a simple example. We know a lot about K3. The reason why simple was removed, because it's kind of, you don't want to call simple something which is infinite. So I'll come back if I'll have time and show you why it's suddenly in one day we are now convinced that the number is infinite, which is, you would say, could be in a bit of tension with the discounting ideas of flux vacua. So let's leave it for later. Perhaps I'll have time to talk about this. Okay. Here's what I want to show you. So when I was trying to understand the language which Aspinwall was using with regard to this treatment of K3 surfaces, he told me about the attractive K3 surfaces, which are taking a significant part of our arguments about moduli fixing. And so the title of this transparency and the fact that flux vacua and attractors may have a very deep connection comes through this example. So the deep connection, I'm not in a position completely treat at this stage, but the example I can, and I'll show you things. So I call it now explicitly attractive K3 surfaces. Now, what is known, and I learned it from references in the paper which I'm writing with Aspinwall, there is reference to mathematical books. So those are well classified by mathematicians. They always go by the name attractive K3 surfaces. So what is special about them? They are rigid, as different from generic K3. So any infinitesimal deformation of complex structure would always decrease the rank of the Picard lattice on K3, which is equal to 20. Now, what mathematicians are using in the definition of this particular stabilized compact manifold is Torelli theorem, which was in the very first paper of Trivedi and Tripathi, where they have performed stabilization of flux vacua. So what Torelli theorem tells you, that the complex structure of this attractive K3 surface is defined in terms of particular form, which is associated with choice of fluxes, where Q and P are part of symplectic structure. Now, when I stared at this expression, I have realized that actually we don't need this inexplicit. So the theorem tells you that all 20 moduli somehow are fixed in terms of fluxes. Then Greg Moore has a lot of discussion in his recent lectures in Lesouche on attractors as well as on flux vacua. And again, he points out that you can find out in terms of Qs and Ps what is tau, this moduli. But then again, you rely on the theorem. So what I'd like to show you here is that we may use the solution of complete set of attractor equations and give the explicit answer for all moduli in terms of fluxes. So I started writing it as an appendix to this modular fixing, and then I have realized the fact that I can use black holes to give the value of complex structure in K3 surface could have a deeper meaning, and therefore it will probably go separately. So here's what is happening. So part of these attractor equations were already used in definition. Oh, before I go to details, of course, you have heard about recent activity which Waffa and Strominger and I think Ferlin that joined them, and probably Bernard talked about this set of papers. And Hiroshi Oguri gave a talk recently at SLAC, and his main their emphasis was to say, things about black hole attractors are somehow related to flux vacua and KKLT stabilization. And I thought it cannot happen because when we have black holes, we have fluxes in our four-dimensional space. They break Lorentz symmetry. Whereas for cosmology, I need a four-dimensional space without any breaking of Lorentz symmetry. So those two things cannot be really related. However, then suddenly I found that, so what Moore is saying, that he proposes that the attractor value of Z squared fixed, which we know from attractors, should be associated with the area of the unit cell in the transcendental lattice of the K3 surface, which Aspinwall was defining for making the point about modular fixing. So what I add now to your picture and perhaps to your desire to use whoever knows things about attractors, you can perhaps bring other things into flux vacuum and cosmology. This is what happened here. So there are these other 20 unfixed. They are fixed inexplicitly. So this theorem tells you the other 20 moduli are also function of just fluxes. But it doesn't tell you what what they are. So I opened one of my old papers, and here it was. The first guy, the tau, is given by pq over p squared, and then I have square root of area, roughly speaking. And I believe Bernard was showing formulas like that in his lecture. Here, those of you who are here may even remember this. But probably it was with regard to black hole attractors. Now it is with regard to the complex structure of K3. Now, so the old paper, the old attractor paper tells that all other 20 moduli are these particular functions of just fluxes, because see, tau bar, you know, again, is just function of P and Q. And Alex Maloney, in his lecture in the morning, explained to us why we were struggling with all this attractor behavior near black hole horizon to get out of arbitrary moduli and make them depending on just integers, precisely because if you expect that the area is somehow associated with the entropy and with the counting of states, you can't have continuously varying moduli. And so this was the whole story. But now in this context of flux vacua, part of which is by using fluxes, we can stabilize complex structures and axion dilaton. Then we need instanton corrections to stabilize the rest. But already in the first part of the problem, you see what happens. You take it seems that those attractor equations, if they are interpreted correctly in the context of cosmology, they simply give you the answer. So this is what goes from a book to book about the Sterelli theorem, but you actually have the total number of all complex structure as function of fluxes. And it may be quite important, I'll probably tell you later, but so for now, what I would like to say that it was possible in this particular situation simply because I was interested in details of this stabilization of K3, that I could use a non-solution of attractor equation from some black holes. And I still feel in a state of shock because for so many years, it was clear that those four-dimensional black holes have nothing at all to do with four-dimensional cosmology. And now it seems something else is happening. So I expect something more to come in this direction. This result is like 2 days old, but I'm sure it is correct still. Okay, so the total story back to cosmology seems to say that not only we may have, I mean, I'm not saying now, because as of now, we just seem to add those particular class of models, or just have much more models which we would exclude from our consideration for cosmology because they would not be stabilizing via instanton corrections. So we see in the interesting examples that they actually do have instanton corrections. We seem to be able to stabilize them. And this means that in principle, we have lots of those choices. Like we could have some of the flat direction very, very high, and they will somehow help us with eternal inflation, because if the system spends a lot of time at some flat direction, it could control, you know, not the recent 60 foldings, but something about the total population of the landscape. But we have many of them, and we will just, you know, change those P's and Q's and go to other place where we still have a nice, a nice flat direction, but this is closer to the place where we would like to be. And finally, we can even be at our 60 foldings if we are lucky after all, and we have some really nice valleys, and they're friendly, and you know, we can live here in our part of the universe, etc. So the fact that we have this huge amount of new vacua, which we can now understand better, and perhaps even use these attractor equations which we solved before, because they give us explicit information on various moduli and tell us that with a given choice of fluxes, this is what we have. With some other choice of fluxes, we have something else. And hopefully we will find those solutions, and it is worth looking at this. So this is my final transparency. So I would like to say, can we find friendly parts of the stringy landscape with good particle physics and cosmology is the question which, of course, everybody would like to know. And before LHC and Planck and Large-Scale Structure Telescope and SNAP will start operating, we still have time, but it may run out. And so we may use statistics as well as interesting dynamical models. But we have to find models in the landscape consistent with the data, I believe. Hopefully, string theory will live up to expectations when new data will come, both with regard to particle physics as well as cosmology. But I think there is a lot of work to do here, and the work is quite interesting. Thank you. Correct. That is correct. So what we have to explain, and I didn't give you the full picture, for example, of any of the inflationary models, I just told you that even before we start thinking of this, we have to provide that our space is not 10-dimensional or 11-dimensional. And in fact, we can see this can be done, after which we have to We can work in any class of models which I showed you just online. I'll talk more about this in my three lectures next week for those of you who would. So I'll answer this question in more detail. Today I focused on more more recent calculation of Dirac index. On one hand, it is a very simple problem, but it was not known what the solution is. And so I simply didn't talk about it. This is like a prerequisite to whatever we need later. Thank you. Yes? Okay, so this is what I know. I know much more about the dual of it, which is type 2B on K3 times T2 over Z2. And I didn't believe that they're dual, but now I see that counting on M5 and counting on type 2B do work. So this four-dimensional theory is the D3-D7 model which I need, what has been worked out with Ferrara and his collaborators like Trigianti and Auri and like five papers on it. And I know every single field in this model in four dimensions. Because see, if I would work in M theory, I have to blow up from three dimension to go to four. And I simply don't like this route. I prefer then to go to four. Because then everything has been worked out. This is one of the reasons why this is my favorite model, because the way you go in type 2B and you have this Ferrara et al. Paper on your desk, you know the model completely. It probably, yeah, but I know it less. But in four dimensions, one of the reasons why I was so concerned, it was clear that the volume of T2 over Z2 is a hyper. And therefore, you cannot use Gugino condensation. Therefore, the question was, either instanton corrections will do the job, or if the index cannot be changed, then I have to throw out this model and do something else. So as of now, the index is telling us we can have instanton corrections, even for the hyper here, because it has nothing to do with being 1 over g squared f mu squared.